Read my lips. No new taxes.
I'll make our government open and transparent so that anyone can ensure that our business is the people's business.
I remember landing under sniper fire. There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles.
I will close Guantanamo. I will restore habeas corpus.
You're listening to Part of the Problem on the Gas Digital Network.
How can you be the freest country in the world when you lock more of your own people in cages than any other country in the world? The lesson of 9/11 should have been to never fund another young rebel group in this part of the world again.
America started as the smallest government in history, and it's become the biggest government in world history.
At the end of the day, it's all about freedom.
Here's your host, Dave Smith.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. Ooh, we got a good one for you today. Real quick before we get into the show, let me just say thank you to everybody who came out to the show in Boston last night. Real pleasure to meet some of the listeners to the show. Had a great time. And also, one more reminder, the ticket link will be available this week for my debut comedy special being produced by Gas Digital. June 1st is the show at the Triad Theater in New York City. Again, ticket links will be available this week. Okay, let's get into it. We have a great guest today, one of my favorite people in this liberty world that we are all existing in, and the front man for Backwards. Their debut album, Veracity, was released today, which I'm very excited about. I pre-ordered my copy. I'm very excited to get into it. Welcome back to the show, Eric July. How are you, sir?
Man, doing good, Dave. I'm glad to be back. This is obviously one of my favorite things to be a part of, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, thank you so much, and congratulations on the album. It's out today. Tell people a little bit about it. This is your band's debut album, correct?
Yeah, debut album dropped today. Long time coming. We announced that we were a band, it was in January of 2015. So it's been a 2-year process of really getting us off the ground. And the reason why it's taken so much time is because we purposely, kept it independent. You know what I mean? So, we kept it independent. We have a little partnership with Stacey Recordings, but other than that, we control everything. And so it's a process, trying to do things the right way. And, it's been a long time coming, and it's finally, we have a product that we can put out there. The message is no off switch as far as who I am as an individual and activist. That stuff is embedded in the album, and it's 18 tracks. Jam-packed, a lot of different styles, we're kind of all over the place with, and it was fun to record, and so far, as of what we're recording right now, I believe we have the number 4 album on iTunes right now, and we have a great chance to really end up in the top 10 on Billboard's hard rock charts. So this is a special kind of deal that's going on, mainly because we're in a position to really do some trailblazing as far as keeping it independent and showing people that you don't really have to sell, your soul and tour nonstop just for the sake of doing it to see some type of success.
Yeah, that's really cool. Obviously, I very much agree with that spirit, and I try to do a lot of things in my own career that way. I think there are obviously a lot of challenges. It's not easy, but it's like building a solid foundation when you do it. And after you put in the work, you really kind of have all of this in it, and it kind of can't be taken away from you, which is a really beautiful thing. I'll tell you, man, I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Look, I became a fan of yours for the libertarian activism stuff before I knew anything about your music, really. Like, I saw when we did that first podcast together, I don't think I'd ever heard a song of yours. I knew you were a musician, I loved your appearances on Fox News and like videos on like the minimum wage and stuff like that. And I was just blown away with how good the music is. It warms my heart so much that I don't, because I already wanted to root for you. But first, really, what got me really paying attention to your stuff was the ANCAP raps, which if anyone who listens to this show has not heard, I really recommend. It's really amazing how you put together this kind of like very detailed argument for a stateless society while you're burning Bernie Sanders, while you're also making it like genuinely a good piece of like hip hop. And I was really impressed with that. And then the stuff I started listening to Some of the tracks that I've heard from the band are really incredible. So I very much recommend, like, people, this is genuinely good music. Please go give it a listen. There's a lot of stuff on YouTube that's already out they can find, and then I recommend purchasing the album very much.
For sure. Yeah, man. It was, again, a fun process, man, and that it's cool. You get people, even like the day we released it, it's just people now just now finding out that I'm even in a band, which is cool. You know what I mean? Like, there's no knock. I mean, you have people that know me for one or the other. You have people that, you know, knew me from being a musician, a hip hop head, or a metal vocalist in the previous bands that I was in, and they kind of, you know, that now they know I'm an activist and vice versa. So it's kind of cool to see those different, I guess, families come together for like this particular release. And yeah, I mean I'm a musician. This isn't something I take lightly. Wasn't doing it just to be doing it. You know what I mean? This is what I would hope, you know, I'm okay at it, you know what I mean? So, you know, we work our tail off. I'm obviously backed with a lot of good guys for the band's sake that really work hard and put in a lot of effort to from the instruments and really making this message come to life and really making this band sort of a unique kind of deal that comes about. And again, it's been fun. It was fun to record. It's fun to branch off and do like the hip hop stuff as well, but I'm really proud of Backwards because it's really the first project that I've been a part of that I don't have to hit an off switch. You know, you have me as a person that loves metal and hardcore, person that loves hip hop, and a person that loves to, you know, talk about being in a free and voluntary society and advocate for it. So to be able to do all that without having, there's no off switch, and I'm as comfortable as I've ever been as a musician in Backwards because I don't have to turn anything off. It's like what you see is what you get. I can, you know, get off the stage and then go host a podcast or whatever and do and speak this same message, and I don't have to hit anything, no off switch, and it feels very, very good, you know, for me because I've been there where I had to kind of, I don't want to say suppress it, but it was only certain times where I could, you know, say certain things, and now it's like I'm a loose cannon and it feels good.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's a weird, sometimes there's a weird, even when it's not tangible, there's a weird subtle pressure to just not exactly, you know, like go there, or, you know, there might be some problems if you do. And it's very nice to have that kind of that weight taken off your shoulders. So some of the other stuff you've been doing, because I try to follow your stuff, I saw you were doing those, you were in the Liberty Tunes. Am I saying that right? What are they called?
Freedom Tunes.
The Freedom Tunes. I'm sorry. Freedom Tunes. Yeah, which are just fantastic. I'd recommend people go look those up. There's a really another just really goofy but hilarious and great way to kind of get the message across. And I'm always interested in new ideas of that. And like you said, I see you on these podcasts and stuff. I watched recently what I would recommend people go check out is you had a conversation with Sheriff David Clark. Okay. Yeah. And he's like a regular on Fox News and some of these other shows, and he's kind of this. You make the point in the interview at the beginning, but you almost get, you know, you get him in these little sound bites where he says these little provocative things, and it was interesting for me to see you guys have this long conversation. I found it interesting on a few different levels. Like, number one, I thought it was a very thought provoking conversation, and I was like, oh man, that was really interesting. And then I went on Facebook and saw a bunch of people giving you crap for, I guess, not like jumping down his throat. When I say a bunch of people, it was a couple people, but
that was insane.
Yeah, tell people about this. By the way, I recommend go checking it out on YouTube because I did. I thought it was a very interesting conversation. But tell us how that interview came about and what the response to that was.
Well, you know, I co-founded beinglibertarian.com, and I do a lot of, you know, again, this is one of my deals is I'm co-head of multimedia there, and we do interviews. We interview a lot of people from a lot of different sides of the spectrum. And the purpose of those Being Liberty TV kind of interviews, it's not a debate. Like, we have, like, the podcast and stuff like that, but those particular deals are not debates. Any interviews you see that we do, we're not trying to, you know, jump down their throat. So people were upset because I interviewed him, and he's not, you know, he's not necessarily a libertarian, but, you know, they got upset because I wasn't just grilling them. It wasn't even that I wouldn't grill them. It was just because I had a damn conversation with them in the first place. I'm like, is this the type of, well, you know, it kind of made me step back and realize, you know, these damn sock accounts and cornballs all over the internet who want to keep like libertarianism as this like niche movement, right? Mm-hmm. Of people in which you only converse with, it's the cool kids club, right? You only converse with certain people. That doesn't advance this philosophy or anything like that. Because all I know is that in doing that interview, I got Sheriff Clark to admit flat out that the war on drugs was a failure.
Yes.
He's not going to go on Sean Hannity and say that. He's not going to go on, you know, Bill O'Reilly or whoever. He's not going to go on any of those platforms and say that. But
no, you're absolutely right.
Flat out admit that.
You're absolutely right. It's fascinating because I'll tell you, it's two different things. Like, there's having a conversation with someone and having a debate with someone. And the thing that bugs me is that it's not as if, because I've been caught in the same situation where I get shit for having a conversation with someone. It's not as if, like, I'm willing to debate people, and I've seen you. You will go and debate people as well. We'll do that, but it's a different thing. And sometimes a conversation can actually be more illuminating, because when you get into a debate, everyone gets in their defensive I'm trying to win this debate mode. But it was an excellent interview overall, and that was what you just touched on was the most interesting part of it, was that you got him to admit that no matter how he feels in his heart, this has clearly been a failed strategy, referring to the war on drugs. And then he admitted this other thing, which I just love. It was such a great moment, because we always, as anarcho-capitalists, we see this where a lot of others don't, but everybody's justification for government always comes down to justifying some other thing about government. Like, we have regulation A, so we need regulation B. And he, without you prodding him there, you kind of, I thought, did a very good job of walking the line of going, look, I'm coming at it from this point of view where I look against libertarianism. Here's what we see the same on. What do you think about this? And then he ends up going, well, I mean, yeah, I guess if there was no regulation, like, he basically admits that, yeah, you should kind of be allowed to do drugs, but it shouldn't be subsidized if, you know, your failures as a result of drugs, which is the exact libertarian point, of course. Exactly. And almost every justification for government ends up coming down for this. You know, it's like what we've been talking on the show about in Obamacare, where they'll be like, okay, well, once you have the regulation that pre-existing conditions will be covered, then you need some type of mandate, then you need some type of this. And, like, there's all these different things in government. And so I thought that was a great moment where you kind of got that out of him, which you maybe in a debate setting wouldn't have been able to get out of him.
Right. No, I wouldn't have been able to get, because he would have been on the defense. And again, that's the point of those, because we have those podcasts. You see, and for somebody to act like I won't debate something, that's just silly, because you can just Google my damn name at YouTube. You see all these debates that I'm always having with people. So it's not that. It's just that for that particular segment on those platforms, that's what it. Hell, I'm interviewing, like, next week, Rachel Dolezal. You know what I mean?
Oh, really?
So I go on any side of the spectrum. Like, I don't mind that. We have on the podcast on Backwards Live, we're going to have a salon writer on there as well. So it's like, I'll go on certain ends in debate. That's not an issue. But what we're doing right here for those particular segments is to get those, because all I ever heard from, and even me as a person that's on the outside, I learned things new about them that I wouldn't have known about him if I were to debate him. But, you know, we learn about when we hear these guys, you know, on these little segments, sound bites, we don't really get their actual view. It's like they get 20 seconds to say whatever they have to say. And, you know, you've been on some of these segments on Fox and stuff like that. I've been there. You know, you don't really get time to break it down. It's the same for him. So I wanted to, for myself as well as the listeners, to know more so in depth, because even when you're talking about converting people, you know what I mean? Like, how in the hell are you going to convert somebody if you don't know why it is that they think what it is they think?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, we might think that what they think is stupid or they're wrong, but we can't really, you know, you're not going to go as far as planting a seed unless you understand why is it that they believe that? Because once we got off the air, I got to mention, he was like, yeah, you mentioned this. What was that? Anarcho-capitalism. He didn't know nothing about it. And I got to have a conversation with Sheriff Clark about anarcho-capitalism. And, you know, it wasn't like he didn't jump down my throat. He was like, oh, that's an interesting, that's an interesting kind of philosophy, you know, to adopt. You know what I mean? Because there was some things that definitely early on in the interview, we talked about some, you can say what you want about Clark, but definitely when we were talking about the black community, he wasn't necessarily wrong on some of those, on identifying some of those particular issues. And, you know, we had a crossover effect, and I got to talk to him after, like, off the air, briefly about libertarianism and anarcho-capitalism. Again, if I had debated him, there was no way that would have happened.
Of course, no, I you're absolutely right. Couldn't agree with you more. And I find it very interesting that, you know, there's this, certainly he made some very good points when he was talking about, you know, kind of stuff that we all agree with, like what the left wing has done to some of these communities. And, you know, so absolutely he made a good point about that. And I got to say that even as you said, it seems to me like this thing that I really do worry about it getting into the liberty movement, because it seems like such a leftist impulse. But this idea that, like, we don't have to win the argument. We can simply just say, or like we don't have to have the conversation. We don't actually have to see what other people's ideas are. I mean, look, I just maybe one of the reasons why I saw this and was kind of relating to this issue is because I just had I had Richard Spencer on my show recently, and I was getting a lot of shit for that. And I find it interesting and a very similar thing to what you were having, because I wasn't like having a debate with him. Of course, I would make very clear what my position on natural rights and things like that are, and I wouldn't hold back. But I just don't exactly understand where, it almost seems to come from an insecurity. Like, do you not think we have the better ideas? If you do believe we have the better ideas, wouldn't you want them all out there?
Right. Like, that's exactly what it is. It's like, it is like a sense of insecurity. But again, it's the cool kids club. It's like, once, as libertarianism grows and, we got like social media, which is allowing us to really put these ideas out there for other people to learn about it and stuff like that. You know what I mean? You get you're starting to see there's two different kind of libertarians. You got those that really just want to keep it like kind of in this box of this niche movement in which, cool kids, is something like edgy that they can adopt that nobody else really adopts. And then you have those that actually want to spread the philosophy and actually at least work towards a freer society. Usually the people that like the former, they have no desire to have a conversation with other people to see where it is that, why is it that they think what they think? Because I think, again, you're going to have a hard time really trying to get people to adopt what it is that you adopt if you can't understand why it is that they adopt what it is. Because we have the ideas on our side automatic, so it shouldn't be a problem for us to just engage in conversations.
No, you're right.
With these other people that don't, they might not be libertarians, they certainly might not be anarcho-capitalists, and they might not think like we think, but let's at least have an honest conversation. Because even myself, I learned some new things about Sheriff Clark. And you see, like, all right, Wise was maybe in the past that he opposed the drug war, and then he starts he was for it. Then he starts talking about, if we legalize, I don't want people, the taxpayer to subsidize. That's a legitimate gripe, right? What I mean? So that's a legitimate fear. So, but if I'm not having a conversation with him, I don't know that. You know what I mean? I don't know that. So then I could, maybe later or when we're starting to have the conversation about what it is that we adopt in terms of philosophy, I can say that's a legitimate fear, but, that means that maybe we need to simultaneously advocate that, all right, well, if we put it all out there, decriminalize this, we're not going to be subsidizing this and that, or somebody's addiction. We're not going to be subsidizing to put people in said, housing or something because they got strung out or something like that. Like, yes, that's a legitimate gripe. But again, if we don't have a conversation in the first place, how on earth are we going to even know that's why he feels the way that he's felt about it in the past?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And then there's also, I find like this weird dynamic where it's like what gets outrage and what doesn't seems a little bit strange to me within the libertarian world. Like, right away, we've already kind of decided by being here that we have a little bit different of a value system than, say, the left does. And we find, like, violence to be the ultimate immoral act that we kind of base our moral philosophy around. And there's this thing where I think someone like Sheriff Brown or someone like that, Clark, I think he, something, it's because he's like tough on the border and that's kind of seen as like racist or something like that, supposed to be the ultimate crime. One of the things that really bothers me, and I'm not one of these people who promotes like libertarian infighting, but one of the things that really bothers me about kind of a lot of people in the libertarian world is that someone, and this is one of the things I was saying when people are so offended that I was talking to Richard Spencer, they'll be like, oh my God, how could you talk to someone like that who has these bigoted views? And then I could sit down with like a well-mannered supporter of the war in Iraq, and no one seems to have a problem with that.
I interviewed Senator, a former, he was a House Majority Leader, Trent Lott.
Right.
And nobody said anything. So I was like, what the hell is this? Like, the minute I interviewed Clark, and Clark, he really just kind of came up in the game the last, couple to a few years. Just Lott was a senator, in the House. He was in the Senate and the House for like, 30 years plus, something along those lines. And I was interviewing him and nobody said anything. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't get any of that. And I was like, that's crazy. That was so crazy to me.
I mean, I've seen mainstream libertarians who I've talked to, fairly high up people in the mainstream libertarian world who are like really have a moral problem with the fact that Ron Paul never disavowed those newsletters hard enough, yet don't have a problem with libertarian think tanks that have the Fed chairman over to cocktail parties that supported the war in Iraq, that supported. It's like, where are the values here? Like, I don't really love what was in those newsletters either, but why are our values these social justice warrior? Like, I'm outraged.
It's dangerous, so, man. That's dangerous. That's a dangerous. And this is you know, I've talked to Tom Woods about this as well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And how this kind of, I don't want to call it infiltration, but it's that's my fear of the libertarian movement is this whole we're letting the left win by kind of trying to get outraged over stuff that, you know, just so, because again, like I've said this on, I believe, Part of the Problem as well. Like, I'm not gonna be as offended as somebody, you know, that might dislike me because I'm like black or something like that, as opposed to if he wants to use, you know, force, you know what I mean, aggression upon me. That's a completely different story. You can think I'm stupid or dumb just because I'm black. That doesn't do anything to me. But, you know, you just want to start using aggression, you know what I mean? So an egalitarian is more dangerous to me than if a voluntary person wants to, you know, I guess voluntarily segregate himself from a certain type of person. That person is less of a threat to me than some egalitarian.
Absolutely.
That wants to use the threat of a government gun. But, you know, he's all about, you know, equality and all of this, you know, silliness. You know what I mean? So where are the hell of our priorities at? If this is supposed to be a philosophy about, you know, property rights, and this is why we recognize that things like initiation of violence and stuff are wrong, like, where the hell are we, why are we, just because of the whole identity politics, we're going to get more offended at that than we are at somebody that wants to use a threat of a government gun? Like, what the hell are we doing here?
Yes, you're 100% right. I couldn't agree more with the voluntary kind of this is what I tried to get at with Richard Spencer. At the end of the day, like, right, I don't really care if you're a supremacist and you want to live around your own people. I have nothing against the right. Amish, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure they think they're better than all of us on some level. I think most hardcore, very religious people have, if you really got down to their belief, believe in some supremacy of their kind of group over others. But whatever, as long as you're not. But now, personally, I can also think that that's kind of dumb, because me personally, I would much rather live in a community with like Eric July and Thomas Sowell than some Bernie Sanders supporter. Like, to be honest, that's my choice. But again, I have no problem with whatever these people think. I agree with you completely. And I would just add, and this is the other point that I tend to make, is that like what you were saying, where you go like, okay, so we care about initiating violence a lot more than we do about someone, you know, hurting someone's feelings. And there's a pretty interesting, you know, there's a pretty interesting dynamic where the people like Democrats and left-wing progressives, who are the ones who are most into initiatory violence, they all think that racism is the most evil crime in the world. Like, there's something very convenient for their worldview that the most evil crime, and this is almost why I'm getting into this out of your conversation with the sheriff, because, you know, like Sheriff Clark, whatever we may disagree with him, the reason why he's evil is because he challenges the third rail, which is the narrative that black people, you know, like it's not just this white supremacy racism bullshit that the left feeds.
Right. No. That's it. That's why, you know, and that's why I was trying to get the libertarians to realize, like, Sheriff Clark, if you go ask a leftist why they say he's wrong, it's not because he's a, you know, he's a cop, and it's not because he's, you know what I mean, or whatever. Like, you know, it's not because of that. He holds us, he's an agent of the state. That's not why they oppose. They oppose because they think he, you know, he's against minorities, or, you know, he's for like border walls, and or he's for, you know, he's very critical of like the black community and stuff like that. So people don't like to hear to him. That's why they oppose him. It has that's on the back burner as far as, you know, his position on the border. But, you know, in his position on it, when they do criticize the position on the border, it's not because the border exists, because they think, oh, well, it's, I guess, kind of affects minorities, you know, obviously brown folks south of Texas more than it was a white person. So they just deem it as racist. So it goes back to the identity politics. That has nothing to do with the fact that he's an agent of the state. That's not what it is. Yeah. But my thing, and what I'm trying to get libertarians to not fall into that trap of playing that game of I'm going to focus on, as opposed to really focusing on the initiatory violence, I'm going to focus on the identity politics. I'm going to focus on the fact that somebody's feelings got hurt. in this aspect. You know, that's a really dangerous thing, and I've seen that amongst them. I call it out. You know what I mean? Like you said, I'm not big on the infighting, but I also don't want to see this movement. You know, I didn't join this movement. I didn't leave the left to sit and have another movement hijacked by the left. That's in the name of this radical kind of egalitarianism, which is the antithesis of actual libertarianism.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But then I got to say, I'm also a little bit concerned about the identity politics I see bubbling up on the alt-right and this kind of like reactionary movement to the left, which, in my opinion, mirrors the left in a lot of ways.
That's what the alt-right is it's a reactionary movement.
Yeah, I right. And so I, in a way, I'm somewhat sympathetic. Because I understand. I think with a lot of these reactionary movements, my default position is usually some amount of sympathy. Like, whether it's like terrorists in the Middle East hating America, or black people in the inner city hating cops, or the alt-right hating the left, I do tend to look at, you know, who I see as kind of being the initial aggressor there. And
So I
look at it, not to say that they're completely justified in any of their actions. But what do you think about like the rise of the alt-right? One of the things I talked about that I talk about a lot on the show, that it's kind of heartbreaking to me in a way, but it's just how like in the fall of the Ron Paul moment into the Donald Trump moment, how we seem to have kind of lost all of our juice. And if you look at like YouTube internet comments, they went from all being like end the Fed and Ron Paul stuff to being like, you know, build the wall and stuff that I'm maybe not as into. So what do you think about the alt-right and everything over the last year?
Well, I mean, all right. Well, first and foremost, it is a reactionary movement. You mentioned that. But the reason why, you know, I don't even talk about these guys that much, because I don't feel like they are a, you know, I go by, I guess, threat. Right. And this is why I'm always constantly attacking. If I am going to attack a side, it's the left for the most part, because I'm involved in the arts. You know what I mean? And I see the left. There's no right wing establishment in these arts, man. They all leftists. I'm dealing with it on the music side right now and the kind of the policies involved in that, because we stand where we stand. But you know, the all right, it's one of those things where I don't spend too much time talking about it, because I think it's a boogeyman. And I think that is most of what I feel like as far as the threat with people that deem themselves as the all right is because people make these guys appear to be way more important or impactful than what they actually are. Who the hell knew who the fuck Richard Spencer was a year ago?
Yeah.
Nobody knew who the hell he was, but he stood in a room and he said, you know, said what he said in a room full of like 200 people, and now all of a sudden this little dude is a threat. You know what I mean? Like, that's that. I'm looking at that, and this is why I'm saying, like, you know, and I travel a lot. You travel a lot. I don't see these people. I do not see these people. I will see a leftist protesting, you know, and being anti-property rights long before I see somebody stomping around saying they hate minorities and, you know, want to talk about white genocide. So I'm like, who are these people? Most of the people that I even feel like, and half the time these people can't even nail down who these alt-right folks. I've asked this question several times. You get people like say that Milo Yiannopoulos was a member of the alt-right. He disavows the alt-right. Trump did the same thing early on. They said Trump was the alt-right. Right. They say Spencer's the alt-right. They don't know the difference between a nationalist and a supremacist. Like, it's like, I'm like, who the fuck, who is the alt-right? They can't even answer that question. And the ones they normally point to, it's a bunch of sock accounts hiding behind fake ass accounts on the internet. So I'm like, why would I waste a whole lot of time? And I think people have criticized me for like, oh, you don't ever attack alt-right. I'm like, who the fuck is the alt-right? Like, I don't see these people. I travel a lot. You think my black ass would be the first one to really experience the hatefulness of them? But I experience more hate from the left than I ever experienced from these cats, because I don't see them. I do not see these guys at all. I see, there's maybe leaning folks that lean that way, and I'm not saying that they don't exist. I'm not that stupid.
Sure, of
I know
course,
very,
no.
very well that they exist. But I think, what we deem as the alt-right, the reason why people are kind of pearl clutching at the thought of them is because I think a lot of people is a boogeyman. They needed somebody to attack. And it's like, well, we got these guys who are getting loud because they're hiding behind a little fucking sock accounts on the internet, and they're cracking jokes and posting memes and shit. So we all of a sudden think that they're a threat. I made a when people first started talking about the alt-right, I made a video on that, and I was like, who are these people? Like, I can't, every time I'm asking somebody a question, they say it's a different person. They can't never really nail it down. And the people that they do nail down have already either disavowed from that said movement, or it's people who nobody knows who, these got fake accounts on the internet. That's the last person I'm scared of. Some dude that ain't even, you know, real enough to put his real name out there. So it's like, I'm not going to pearl clutch at the idea or let these little, whether it be independent media sources or let people on the internet kind of bait me into having to speak on this group of people when I honestly do not think these guys are nearly as, well, no, I don't think, I know that these guys are nearly as prominent. And this is just me interacting in real life. Yeah. Like, again, I travel the country. I go, I'm all everywhere. And I'm in the heart of Texas as well. And I don't see these people, but you bet your ass. I've been all kind of, I was in the middle of the inauguration. Ironically, I did a video. We got to release it on Revolver magazine. That'd been the first place you thought I was going to see the alt-right, right? You know, smack dab in the middle of the inauguration. I'm having, you know, I had my producer with me and we were, you know, filming and stuff like that. Still didn't see none of these cats. So I'm like, why in the hell would I pearl clutch at this idea of this said movement growing when I can't even identify these people in real life?
Right.
But I'm not stupid enough to say they don't exist.
No, I think you make a really important point, and I think that a lot of what a lot of establishment Democrats and people on the left have tried to do is kind of paint the entire Trump movement as this whatever white nationalist alt right thing, which is really such a tiny fraction of it. The Trump thing is really just a lot of Americans who kind of decided they were sick and tired of all of this, you know, crap. Do you find yourself, like, I wonder sometimes, because I go back and forth on this, and at some points I'll feel like, you know what, the left is the great enemy, and we just got to defeat them, and whoever we need to partner up with to do so, we need to do so. But then I get a little bit concerned, because, you know, as I see things with, like, this Trump administration unwinding, I mean, I just see all of the disasters. Like, spending is going to go up. Obamacare is not going to get repealed. There was just a huge strike in Iraq the other day, killing a few hundred people. Seems like we're continuing this foreign policy. I mean, there's, like, no – he's out there lecturing the Freedom Caucus for being, like, the only three congressmen with a conscience. Like, what – it just seems like we don't win when we ally with just anyone, you know?
No. Yeah, it is one of those things where, you know, I think that it's a waste. First and foremost, I think it's a huge waste of time to ever try to ally with leftists. But my thing is, you know, as far as these, I knew this whole shit was coming with Trump. But I'm one of those libertarians that, you know, my head's not so far up my ass that I think I'm in the, like, center of the universe, right? And, you know, I would think that even though Trump sucked, and I knew he was going to say, I called it, I'm selling back one of backwards merches, has an X on his name. I caught this shit out last year, you know what I mean? But I knew, in comparison to Hillary, he was like, you know, maybe he would have been the better, I didn't vote, obviously, but I was like, maybe he was the better option of the suckiness, you know what I mean? But, you know, I didn't support either one of them, would never support him, I called it. But I will say that what libertarians need to do is start to put their philosophy, you know, first. Now, I will say, if you are going to participate in the political process, I think that if you have to find yourself allying yourself, it's going to be with more than it's going to be the GOP, obviously, because, you know, you don't get, there's no Ron Paul, Rand Paul, Massey, Lee, Amash. There's no equivalent to that on the left. You throw Cory Booker, there's no Cory, but we just saw how he approached the whole, you know, pharmaceutical companies and stuff like that. He is not any sort of liberty. Maybe Jim Webb, and Webb wasn't the brightest bulb either. You know what I mean? But so if you're going to ally yourself, I think that, you know, maybe you're best doing that. But me personally, I think that I treat each situation, you know, as is. And going out of your way to really ally yourself with the left is a disaster. I think that in itself, it is a disaster. But I don't feel like it's necessary to really have to ally yourself with the left, or like what conservatives are. And me personally, I call a lot of these conservatives leftists as well. You know, me personally, I think, you know, I rank you on how much you believe in property rights. Is pretty much my ranking system as far as where you fall on the political spectrum. But I'm not stupid enough, and I'm not you know, one of those libertarians that think he's in the center of the universe and, oh, we're both sides equally the same. Like, no. That's horse shit. That's not true. It'll never be true. Anybody that understands, you know, I think it's hypocritical for a person to think that they understand Austrian economics and will say that the left and the right is exactly the same in terms of the left and the right being conservatives versus these modern liberals. You know what I mean? That's, I'm not saying. I think out of the two, yeah, the right is a little better, but they suck. You know, both of them suck. So the thing that I feel like people should do is to put their philosophy first as trying to focus on, rather than focus on building these alliances, because what happens is because these two alliances are so dominant, you just get your shit hijacked, really, is what ends up happening. Definitely, if it's, I think leftists, more so than the right, they're great at that, and hijacking your entire movement and just swallowing it and saying, yeah, thanks, bud, this is ours now. And so I think that is a very, very bad idea, but libertarians just need to start really putting their philosophy first. I think that is what it is. Like, so if you put your philosophy first, I feel like I don't have, you need to be trying to ally yourself with me, not vice versa. Yeah, my philosophy may be the minority in their situation, but if I treat it like it's the forefront, like it's the dominating ideas and not this niche movement that I just want to keep in terms of the cool club, I'll be able to speak to different folks. I don't feel like I have to ally myself with any side, conservative or liberal. That's because, again, I do truly, truly believe in this philosophy, and I'm not really satisfied with the whole short-term games of allying myself with the left on criminal justice or something like that, even though I know that these guys are the worst when it comes to property rights, which is the backbone of libertarianism. So, you know, I don't think the whole going out of your way to ally, I think that's a bad idea. But you know, I feel like if you believe in your philosophy, then you don't feel like you, yeah, it's cool maybe to coalition build and stuff like that, but I don't feel like I have to do that to spread libertarianism.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and it almost, I think I've kind of learned the hard way, because I would, like on paper, I would have really liked for the left to be decent allies for us. Like, yep. I would have gone like, oh, they want to stop wars and end mass right. incarceration too. Okay, those are pretty right. huge issues, so let's like get on board with that. But I think, unfortunately, you are right. It's like there is this this leftist the ideology, and not to be say that people can come out of the left. Like, I think it's really important for people
to
remember,
came out the left.
You came out of the left. I came out of the left. Thomas Sowell was a Marxist, yeah, for God's Marxist. Sakes, and went on to write Basic Economics. So, like, it's there's lots of hope that, and this is why I was saying when I was on Tom Woods last time, like, don't stop talking to people on the left just because but there is something about the ideology that once you've bought into it, it's like it's really hard to have anyone of a rational conversation.
I've learned that the hard way. You want to talk about learning the hard way. I learned the hard way.
Yeah.
And I'm like flooded with it. I can imagine you are too, because you're in a similar situation and being involved in the arts.
Yeah.
So you come into contact probably with more leftists than people on the right, because I know I do, being a musician. You know what I mean? So I mean, but having these, it's nearly impossible, because they approach, for the most part, their situation from an emotional standpoint. So me personally, I think it's more effective to shame them out. That's how I got shamed out of my position, because I was getting these arguments and realized that I was losing them. And then I was like, damn, I probably need to start doing some research. Thank God I found Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams. But you know what I mean? Like, when they approach it from the emotional standpoint, that's why that old saying is, you know, if you're a Democrat, you know, by, you know, what said age, at said age, then you have no heart, and, you know, you have no, after a certain age, you know what I mean? If you're not a Republican, then you have no brain or something like that. You know what I mean? So that's the old saying, but I think it goes for some, yeah, they're wrong, but I think more so the right have came to their situation by way of some sort of analysis of logic,
yeah.
Somewhere.
At least they want to.
I'm not saying it's a whole lot of.
Yes. No, I'm with you. But there still is, even, and this was again, like, I thought your conversation with Sheriff Clark kind of showed this. Even if it's someone on the right who we don't necessarily agree with, they're still trying to have a conversation, and it's within a rational framework. Like, they're like, okay, look, violent crime in the inner city is a problem. We want to find a way to solve that. Like, you can agree with that. Like, okay, yes, you're right. That's a problem. Maybe we have a different way on how to solve that and look at, like, the state or, you know, how we use violence. But the left, it's like, there's I try to find a way. You said it perfectly. It's always like an emotional argument. Yep. It always comes down to something like, but what about the kids that will die? Yeah. Or what about, you're a racist, or you're a sa-. I mean, I think they care about race more than Spencer Fisher does, as far as I'm concerned. I mean,
oh, man, dude, they go hand in hand, man, in a lot of cases, man. When I see someone make both of their marks, I'm like, man, y'all have a lot more in common than y'all like to lead yourselves to believe. But, yeah, man, it's emotional. And, I'm not saying that they're right. Definitely when you talk about, like, the flags and stuff like that and the hero worship of cops and the military and stuff, I'm not saying that they don't have their emotional aspects, too. But what I am saying is that, you know, out of those two, who the hell speaks positively about capitalism? Over the other, and it ain't coming from the damn left. I can go, you see all these people that went to CPAC, got Turning Point USA, they got taxation and stuff, photos and stuff like that they were giving, like, so, you know what I mean? Like, I can start there. I have somewhere to start with these leftists, even if I start with, I'm like, yeah, man, these laws are, you know, we're having all this incarceration of all these types of people. Let's abolish this. We'll agree. We'll be like, yeah, man, that's a problem. I'm like, all right, man, let's get rid of these laws. But, yeah, let's abolish the welfare state in the process, because that's doing just as negatively to black people as this drug war. Oh, well, wait a minute. You can't do that. That's racist. Right. And all of this. And black people are just too damn stupid to be able to try to, you know, succeed without the help of some government, mandated, I don't know, assistance in some way, shape, or form. You know what I mean? So, again, like, and it's strictly emotional for the most part. So I think, again, it's more effective to shame them. But it's hard to have a conversation. I know Tom Woods agrees with it. It's like, dude, I know he's converted. He said it. You know, I'm way, having way more rational conversations with somebody on the right than a poll. It's not to say that I won't have. I've had plenty of logical conversations with people on the right. Definitely when we get to talking about military and stuff like that. But I will say out of the two, in comparison, it's not even close.
Yeah.
It is not even close. No, and even when you talk about them even giving me a platform to speak my ideals, the left, dude, over the I've been doing this for maybe since 2012, this whole, like, being a prominent, I guess, activist in some way, shape, maybe 2011, but I have not, maybe one time somebody from the left has called me to be on their show.
Yeah.
But over the years, I've been on Fox, I've been on The Blaze, I've been on, you know, all these conservative news networks, and I don't have to change anything that I'm saying. I had a talk show with Carmine Sabia, who works with BizPac. I don't know if he's still over there, but I know at the time he's a BizPac review, as well as Charles Patrick, who's a black conservative. And again, I didn't have to change my thoughts. They knew I disagree with them where I would, but we have great conversations. We had great shows. And again, I've been on, like, me and Dana Lowe. She's a conservative. She's with me. I find her a good friend of mine, and she'll have me on her show and stuff like that. But I'm not getting that same love from those folks, you know, over there. And I, you know, you've been on Fox Business, you know, Kennedy and stuff like that. I'm like, what a leftist. This show, they not calling my phone.
No, you're absolutely right
about this.
And you would think, even if they disagreed with us where they do, you would think there should be large areas of agreement. I mean, it was crazy to me watching all these leftists celebrate that Judge Napolitano was, like, unofficially suspended for a few days at five, and they're all celebrating that he's off of Fox News, and I'm sitting there going, like, even in your worldview, even in your worldview, you really want the one anti-war, anti-mass spying, anti-mass incarceration, like, constitutionalist natural rights guy off of Fox News? Really? The one guy who pushes back against all this craziness there?
Right.
And you would think, for people like me and you who have these issues, like, we're against the over-policing and the militarization of the cops and these wars and spying and so many, like, really big issues. But yeah, you're absolutely right. They don't seem to want people like us on. I'll tell you, I almost, like, you know, I've had some of my own personal narratives kind of challenged a little bit over the last couple years. I'll be honest, I've had to take another look at the immigration issue, and it wasn't nearly as simple as I kind of thought it was.
I think, dude, man, I'm glad you actually had to. I hate to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
You know, I'm glad I was the same way. You know, I've had to reanalyze, and it's not necessarily to say that the position changed, but, you know, we've always accepted that it was either open borders versus closed borders, and that was the open borders position was just the libertarian, you know, position. But, you know, I've had to revisit that, not to say that my position changed, but I had to I realized, number one, that it was never that black and white of an issue.
Yeah.
You know, in the first place, it never should have been limited to just open, wide open borders or this and that. Because, you know, I think me having my interactions with these damn communists probably is what did it for me. But I'm like, wait a minute, why do we agree on open borders? Oh, wait a minute, they want to abolish private property. Maybe there's a problem there. You know what I mean? And it clicked. So I'm starting to reanalyze or at least want to go out of my way to at least learn more.
Yes.
And think just to think more critically, not that even if your position doesn't change, at least you're learning more about it and having to reanalyze.
Yes, no, I agree. Position. And I used to do a lot of this stuff. Look, with the war, again, it's not even that my position's completely changed, as you said.
Right.
It's just, but even with the war on drugs stuff, I think I used to borrow some of these advocacy data lefty points that aren't helpful. Like, you know, you'd be like, right. Oh, the biggest demographic is nonviolent criminal, nonviolent crime. And then you look into it and you're like, ah, this is actually kind of bullshit. And yeah. I'll tell you, it's like there are certain narratives that I really liked. Because I kind of want to be the not racist guy who's against the state, you know? Like, that's more of a fun. So, like, I like that, and I do. I've done work and talked about being against the police state and against cops and how they. I still, by any libertarian standard, I see the police as this group of this you know, criminal organization that
they're
robs, kidnaps, and murders with impunity. I mean, it's a really big problem. I'm not, but. You know, I'll see these lefty videos, man, where they're like at these protests yelling at cops, and they're yelling in the face of these guys, this is what a police state looks like, while the guys are standing there allowing them to protest. And as much as I want to hate the state, you got to sit there and be like, man, you lefties, you politically correct social justice warriors are more of a threat to my freedom of speech than these cops are. And it makes me furious to say that.
No, it does, and it's a hard position to take, maybe for just some libertarians, but that's the honest God truth. Because again, my speech has been, intruded on a lot more by these leftists than definitely in the music business. Jesus Christ!
Oh my God!
Like it's not the police. It's not the police that's doing that. It's these leftists that will try to silence. Like my band, I'm not gonna go into too much detail about that to put like some of these leftist kind of, well, not some of them, all of them are leftists, but we've missed out on opportunities for big major tours because I came out against like Planned Parenthood,
right?
You know, or against the fund, not even just Planned, like the funding of it by the state. You know what I mean? So who the hell that you know? That's their right to do that. But what I'm saying is, it's like. I'm coming into more contact with these leftists that want to silence me or are willing to, get a little aggressive more so than it is the law. But and I think when you analyze it, when you think critically about it, I think that's it's the easy libertarian position to take to just say, oh, these cops are the worst people in the world. And I'm not saying that a lot of them aren't. That is not what I'm saying. I'm not saying a lot of people in these military are these evil people, because a lot of them are, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying that they aren't, but what I am saying is that in my everyday life and a lot of people, other people's everyday life, like I'm not coming in contact with these law boys, as much as I'm coming into contact with these lefties who have no problem trying to, silence me. And, are against property rights or will against, property rights. And you've seen them, like you see them at this protest and stuff like that. You see that yourself. Antifa and how ridiculous they get to the point that they want to start destroying people's private property just because, you know, they don't like Trump or something. Or, you know, remember when the whole Milo situation went down at Berkeley and you know, just because he's coming into town, I'm going to go pepper spray chicks and I'm going to, you know, yell at you, elderly, beat people up.
Yeah, it's insane.
You know, like, what the hell?
And I can't not acknowledge too that, you know, when I first came into this libertarian business, it was like in 2007, 2008, Ron Paul got me interested. Ron Paul, and then, I just went down this rabbit hole that we exist in now. But I will say, you know, like the left was kind of against George Bush's wars and warrantless wiretapping and things like that and torture. And it was like, okay, so they seemed a little bit better. And it seems like the right wing has kind of improved on a lot of those issues over the last decade. Like they've gotten a little better. They're like, yeah, these wars were kind of crazy. There's less neocon support than there used to be. There's more, you know, like, okay, there's a lot of support for closing the borders, but that's a lot better than bombing the crap out of
bombing the shit out of
the third world. Yeah. So there's that. And then while that's happened, the left has like abandoned the issues they were at all good on in embracing like microaggressions and this insanity.
It's bad, right? That is absolutely insanity. They haven't gotten better. I mean, I think definitely when you see some of these failures, and then I had that conversation with Trent Lott. He was saying the same thing about, you know, he said his, again, when you have a conversation with people, you get them to admit things. He said in verbatim almost that, you know, my problem with the Bush administration was that the government grew. This is a Republican. It's Trent Lott. You know what I mean? It's like the government, it's like we have a Republican in office. And you mean to tell me that the government got bigger? You know what I mean? And then he was also saying that we need to get away from policing the world and stuff like that. Like, again, like they're getting better. You know what I mean? I'm not going to say they are, even on the issue of even like marijuana and stuff like that. If you talk to some of these people like Dana Loesch and some of these conservative, not just Dana, you know what I mean? But a lot of people, you know what I mean? They aren't really like, yeah, it's like, yeah, whatever. You know what I mean? It's not like, yeah, you want to smoke a little. Like, yo, Clark was saying that on a deal. Like, yeah, you want to smoke a little. That's your business. You know what I mean? And Trent Lott said it in an interview as well. So it's not say that they aren't getting better, but, you know, to see that shift on a lot of these, you know, leftists on the positions that they are good on, they won't even universalize, you know, their positions and stuff like that. And often some of the solutions that they propose will make the situation worse. They have no issue. You know, even if they recognize an issue as an issue, it's for the wrong reasons. Yeah. And it's always like, yeah, I see that this is a problem, but the solution is to, well, we need to steal from people a little more. We need to redistribute this money, or we need to give the government more power over.
You are absolutely right.
Stuff. It's like, so they identify the problem.
You know what? That's a great point. It's a great point. And here's an example of literally exactly what you're talking about, and where you say they identify the right problem, but for the wrong reasons. And I remember having this issue with policing in general in New York a couple of years ago. Was like very highly debated. But we had that stop and frisk thing, and the constitutionality of stop and frisk was challenged. And then there were these cops who got killed. We had a shutdown at one point where they stopped over policing for like a few weeks. And the one thing I remember this sticking with me is I was very against stop and frisk, and still am, because like as a libertarian and a decent human, I think it's a horrific violation of natural rights to say that people can just be openly harassed and detained for no reason. I just think horrible and very ineffective and problematic in other ways. So I was always against that, and you would see every time the left would complain about it, it seemed that their only complaint was that it's racist. They'd be like, it disproportionately happens to minorities. And my thing was kind of like, well, if it's not a violation of individual freedom, then who cares if it disproportionately happens to minorities? And if it is, again, who cares? It shouldn't happen to anybody. Like, it doesn't matter, really. But they would only be at it for that reason. And then I'll tell you, a lot of people on the left, when they had this thing where the police were slowing down for a few weeks, they started getting upset that their programs weren't being funded. And they were coming in conflict with this, you know, policing for profit stuff, where they realized that a lot of these programs that you feel so good about are funded by going out and just raping the people who you claim to want to help. And when they're confronted with that, they kind of go, yeah, but we need that money.
Yep. Yeah, well, it's a necessary, like, but it's crazy, right? Again, when they identify it, it's for the wrong reasons. I mean, we've talked about that with the drug war. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned this several times on Backwards Live on our podcast about whether it be the drug war and over policing and stuff like that. They have an issue of incarceration. You see their talking points. They don't have an issue because people are getting locked up. It's because black people or people of color are disproportionately getting locked up. And that's the issue, which is not the fact that people are if everybody's getting their asses whooped by the police equally, well, it's not a problem. But damn it, because these black folks are getting whooped. At least they perceive that they're getting. I challenge even that idea that this happens that much, you know, more often. But that's a whole different story. Yeah, but let's assume that narrative is true. That's why they oppose it. It's not because, I oppose incarcerating people for nonviolent crimes and stuff like that because that is wrong. Not because of it was somebody's color or gender is being, disproportionately. And they don't even universalize that position because most of the people that are in prison are like, I believe it's like 90% men. But, you know, they're not even like, you know, we don't want to talk about, you know, gender, you know, being the issue in that. So it's like that the whole identity politics as far as, you know, race and people just love to foam at the mouth at the concept of race is an easy talking point. And that's why they oppose what they oppose. It's not for the right reasons. This is why. So, you know, even when I've said this on and got myself in trouble, it's like even on the positions that leftists are, you think they're good on, I challenge that they're even good on those because it's for the wrong reason. So even if we identify an issue and I say, well, you know, taxation, we take something like taxation, it's wrong because it's because of that. And they'll say, well, it's wrong because of that. Well, it's wrong for to them because they want to tax everybody more. Incarceration, this is incarceration is wrong because black people are being disproportionately affected by it or something like that. It's not because, well, the state is an institution of theft, or this is a monopoly on use of force and, you know, an initiatory.
No, you're absolutely right. Even if you're like for open borders, when liberals will talk about immigration, they'll be like, and then we get more taxpayers. And you're like, wait, you mean this criminal organization gets more money? That's horrible. Like, that's the worst part. Right. That's the worst part about this. Why is that like a good... Right. A good thing.
Yeah, I'd rather them keep working under the table.
Yeah, dear God.
As opposed to becoming a citizen just to get their money stolen from them. That's not right.
It's so funny that I was talking about this on the show a few weeks ago, but it's like for all the scandals about Trump, it finally came out that he did pay a bunch of taxes, and this is considered like the least scandalous. Like, oh, well, okay, it's like, so we just found out that he contributed $38 million to a criminal organization murders people.
We should be on his ass about that. I'm offended that he gave that much money, to the state. You know what I mean?
And you couldn't have written that off and not get. You couldn't find some deductions to not pay.
Right. Yeah, Jesus. That's too much, man. Golly, you got to get that down at least under like 10%, man. Like way too much, man. Way too much. But it just goes to show the disconnect. Though on a serious note, it goes to show that disconnect. People,
you know,
that advocate.
Look, you're right. I do think, I guess there's one thing where I kind of like, because I remember being a left on the left, and you know, when you would see people like from my perspective, you know, as like I'm a white guy, or I'm a Jew, but I'm not really religious. I grew up in Brooklyn, which is basically just considered white to be a Jewish kid, and I didn't grow up in like a black neighborhood, but I grew up in Brooklyn. Like everybody's kind of around. It's not like a very, you know, like isolated area. But I guess I always kind of found, you know, you have kind of this knee-jerk thing. But if there was ever anyone like Bill O'Reilly kind of lecturing the black community about getting their act together, you know, your fathers aren't taking care of your kids or someone like that, it would always be very easy to go, ah, that's so stupid. Because like all the shit the black community's been through, for you to just lecture them like, get your act together. And I understand where people on the left, you know, kind of dismiss that. And even from a libertarian perspective, I mean, I still look at the problems in the black community, and I do largely maybe have the same like impulse that a leftist would have, in the sense that I go like, yeah, they have been systematically fucked over for, like, I know the left uses it for an excuse for everything to win every argument, but Jim Crow and slavery were a very real thing.
Absolutely.
It's like, right, exactly. And it's refreshing to hear you talk about it, because you talk about it from a, like a sane perspective, but there's still obviously these very, you know, impactful, long lasting, systematic, horrible things. And then, I mean, to look at things since then, you know, I mean, look, I think one of the best books on this subject was Walter Williams wrote The State Against Blacks. I mean, it's horrific what government policies have done to this community that fought through these other horrific government policies and still kind of kept their shit together for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, if you look at the progress that black community was making between, like, the end of the Civil War up until the 50s when the first civil rights movement really started, it's incredible. And this doesn't really get broken up until you have welfare, the war on drugs, like, all this other modern stuff. Mm-hmm. So I see this as, like, a weird thing where if you are just lecturing at the black community to get their shit together, you are missing part of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. But that being said, and I know you make this point a lot too, there also does need to be some lecturing done. Like, it's a weird,
They're fucking up. But at the end of the day, there's still some issues in these communities that need to be addressed that, you know, are self-employed. But my problem with the left is that what they advocate for the same policies that have also added to these the welfare state being the biggest one. Again, Soul's pointed this out. Walter Williams pointed this out as well, and how that did what Jim Crow and slavery couldn't even do, and that was break up the black family.
Yeah,
because like you said, through all of that, black families were still like, you now you got what, 70% plus on this, you know.
I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Wedlock. It's insane.
It went from being something like a 70% legitimacy rate to a 70% illegitimacy rate in the black community.
Like,
I mean, a really drastic, really, really drastic change.
Insane. That's absolutely insane. sane. And again, like, but some of these policies, and then when you talk about, you know, the economics of it all, another one is the minimum wage. Who's the one that's always saying, you know, advocating for the doubling, hell, the minimum wage, the state minimum wage at this point, or the, excuse me, federal minimum wage at this point. It's like, these are minimum wage is a rotten thing. One minimum wage, we want to talk about who hurts, who hit disproportionately. That hurts people, black people disproportionately, because often these are people that, you know, have little to no skills. They already go to these rotten schools.
You're absolutely
they
right.
Don't learn. They don't learn anything. So the only way that they can learn how to, you know, become an effective person in the workforce is to, you know, work. It's to work these jobs, and you're pricing them out of, right out of the market.
Oh, you're funny, absolutely right. Absolutely
that,
right.
The fact that Bacon Davis still exists is really scary. But that was one of the, you know, that was the reason why minimum wage laws were implemented, because, you know, they didn't want to compete. Like, these white workers didn't want to compete with black. It wasn't just black folks. It was kids. It was.
That's right. But by modern, by Bernie Sanders logic, they must have been doing the right thing. I mean, they were really helping the community inadvertently.
They knew exactly you go hear what they were, what some of these people, these advocates were saying on the floor back then with the Bacon Davis Act. They were specifically trying to implement these minimum wages so they could price minorities out of the out of the market.
And you see it all over the place. It's you see it all over the place to this day, where there'll be illegals working in a kitchen of a restaurant, and you go, look, their weapon is that they're willing to work for way under what these other guys are willing to work. Like that, you take that away from them, that's the only weapon they have. Then they're never going to be hired. And no, you're absolutely right about that, and it's really frustrating that people won't. I mean, it's such a, to me, the idea of just saying, like, one of the things that's really frustrating to me, and I've tried to push back on this, when some people on the right will have this idea that a policy like welfare, they'll be like, well, they take from white taxpayers and give out to black people. So it's almost this feeling, which, by the way, they give out to a lot of white people too. It's just kind of, you know, incorrect. But they have this feeling that they're like winning for this. But I think what's lost a lot of times is how much, you know, every community has its good elements and its bad elements. Every community. Right. And we have these policies where we punish all of the good elements in these communities and we reward all of the bad elements, whether it's by creating black markets for them to make a lot of money, and whether it's shutting down, like you were talking about with minimum wage, shutting down other opportunities that where they could go. But it's amazing that you can't get the simple concept across to liberals that if you, you know, we have a policy where if you're living in one of these communities, if you don't work, we subsidize you. And if you do work, we tax you.
It's called incentivizing people to fail. Is the way of soul. That's why I said, you know, the welfare state was so dangerous, because that's essentially what you're doing. You're incentivizing people to fail. You're saying, so as long as you fail, you stay under this line of whether it be this income or you have this illegitimate kid, we're going to give you housing. We're going to give you all of this. We're going to give you, you know, the food stamps and yada yada. But the minute you get above that line, we stripping all of this shit away. You know what I mean? So it's essentially, you're incentivizing people to fail. That is evil. It's dangerous. But they don't see, that's not, I mean, again, if you understood fundamental econ, you could approach it as such. But these guys have no desire. They think that, I guess, maybe economics is racist. Hell, I don't know what they think these days.
Well, yeah, I guess if they understood fundamental economics, it would solve like 99% of
solve all the problems. Yeah, they'd be consistently right on some of these issues.
It really is such an amazing thing. And that's why one of the things that I think why me and you kind of just see things very in line a lot of the times is because we did read these books like Basic Economics, like in these things where it's like, you once you get the basic, you know, to repeat the title, but once you understand basic economics, it is very hard to, or impossible almost, to unsee it. And unlearn, like, well, okay, well, this is how things work. That may not be nice, it may not be pretty, but this is the way humans actually act and interact, and this is the way it actually works. Listen, I enjoy our conversation so much I completely lose track of time, and we're right up against it. So I just want to remind people one more time, please go buy the album Veracity, man. I think it's so important, man, that we all make sure we support each other in this libertarian community. Listen, I ordered the album, and I got one of the bundle packs that you can get at your website if you want to plug that real quick.
Yeah, backwards.merchnow.com. We also have, obviously, backwardsmusic.com, but backwards.merchnow.com is our specific merchandising site in which you can get the cool bundles and all that. I see people right now. It's funny, while we were just online, somebody just posted a picture of them having the one of the bundles that came in. It just came in. So awesome. Man, you can go cop that, man. It's awesome.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to getting mine in the mail soon. And as I was saying, look, on top of I genuinely got it because I genuinely do love the music you're making. I think it's excellent. But of course, on top of that, it's like, you know, there's a reason why I contribute money to Tom Woods and the Mises Institute and why I want to support, because I think this is genuinely something that can really help advance the message. I don't know exactly what's going to help us advance the message. I look at what Ron Paul did. It was amazing. But I also look back at like what Ayn Rand did. She was a novelist. Mm-hmm. Well, today it's probably not going to be a novelist because America isn't really into novels anymore. But who is going to be able to help push this culture, help push this message? I think these type of things are really important. So, guys, please do go check out that new album, Veracity. Just dropped today, if you're listening to this, maybe in the last couple days. Eric, dude, it's always such a pleasure talking to you. We got to do this again soon, brother.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you having me on, man. You know, I'm a huge fan of you, man, and what you do with the part of the problem, and just really the comedic efforts, man, that you have, man, and really the cultural infiltration, man. So again, I appreciate you having me on, man, and we'll have a chat again for sure.
All right, right back at you, man. Eric July, everybody. All right, guys, thanks for listening. We are going to cut this episode out now because I got to run over to Caroline's. I'm there all weekend opening for Big J Okerson. Thanks again, guys. Oh, I know I owe a bonus episode. We hadn't had it out. Sorry, just been on the road, and now that there's so many shows on this network, it's kind of hard to schedule things here. But we'll get a bonus episode out this week. Okay, thanks, guys. Peace. Eric, thanks again, man. That was great, dude. I loved it.
Awesome, man. That was fun. A great conversation.